know that this, the Bureau allows coal companies to mine coal on federal public lands. And that, of course, is terrible for the pollution that comes from the life cycle of coal and also for climate change. And it's particularly meaningful for us here in the West because the majority of coal that is mined from federal lands is mined in the Western region. This program is outdated. The cost of the coal mining and production and the price that is obtained for those coal leases is way outdated, which means that taxpayers in the U.S. have been losing billions of dollars in revenue. Meanwhile, it's destroying our public lands and worsening climate change, which, of course, here in the West, we're already suffering from in extreme ways through drought and forest fires and snowpack, and already adversely affecting our existing industries here in the West, things we care about a great deal, like outdoor recreation, clean energy, agriculture, fishing. All of these things are tied into how we have been seeing the federal government rolling out this program in a way that is not up to date and not equitable for what we're trying to do and the society we're trying to build in the West. And so in January, we had this amazing thing happen in which President Obama and Secretary Jewell announced a formal plan to reform how the federal coal leasing program is conducted. And so that included an immediate stop to approving new and modified coal leasing, with a few exceptions. But this put a pause on all of the, approving any new leases for coal from federal lands, which was just an incredible step taken forward. And so a big first step after that now is for the federal government to hear from Americans and American residents what the administration should consider in its analysis of the coal leasing program. And so this process is called a Programmatic Environmental Impact Statement, or a PEIS. And that process, to collect this public input is happening all around the country. And we have one happening in Seattle today in our region, where we have over 250 people showing up to talk about the need for this reform to take into account the impact of climate change and the impacts that coal has had on our health and on our public lands and on our ways of life for decades, and really ask the federal government to reform how it's doing business to eventually get the U.S. government out of the coal business for good.
Seja, so as you are up there in Seattle right now, one of the things that always makes me interested is what is the multinational fossil fuel industry doing to potentially stymie any limitations on their activities. So can you talk a little bit about who it is that is opposing the reframing of coal leasing in the United States?
Well, certainly, big coal companies like Peabody, like Arch, a lot of major companies that have been benefiting from major subsidies through this federal program and who are now facing significant financial losses based on their own poor financial decisions and the impact that they have been pushing on the communities for decades. Of course, they don't want to see this change. They don't want to see subsidies get removed. They want to keep paying, bargain basement prices for U.S. coal so that they can make money off of the health and destruction of the health of our communities and the destruction of public lands. And so we're certainly seeing the coal industry doing their best to make sure that this reform does not happen and to keep the status quo going. But the good news is that we are still seeing, thousands of people standing up in this process, making sure that their voices are heard and asking for reform of the program and making sure that there are major updates made to it, that we are setting the foundation to create more accountability for coal companies in the process and make sure that there is room being made for clean energy to take root where the coal industry has been standing in the way for such a long time. So one of the benefits that we'll see from this process is, having a fair review of the program that's going to actually uncover the true cost of coal mining on our public lands and in our communities, really, taking into full account those impacts on our health, on our wallets, and on the environment and the natural resources that we all rely on. And using this review, it's an opportunity to help the U.S. government make smarter choices about our energy policy overall. And it could also require coal companies to actually pay the royalties that reflect the true cost of the coal and allow clean energy to have a much more even playing field for us nationwide.
Because when I hear people, especially everyday people at the grocery store, talk about this issue of fossil fuels, I hear a lot of people say we need it for the economy. Our economy can't function without it. But when I hear about the subsidies that the coal companies get, it makes me feel like the capitalist system, as it's discussed by the people that run our government, is not really what's happening here. And so, I mean, I don't know if you're an economist, Seja, but can you talk a little bit more about the subsidies that the coal companies get? Like, how much are they paid? How does that work?
Well, I am not an economist, but some of the examples I can share with you is just generally coal companies have not been paying the fair market value price for the coal they mine. So what other companies in other parts of the world or private companies are paying for coal, the federal government has been leasing the land that belongs to everyone for prices that are below the market value. In addition, you have coal companies, you know, there is only ever one bidder on those leases. And so the system is set up so that you have one company always guaranteed to get that land lease to mine the coal. And a lot of these sweetheart deals are just made under the radar. So since 1990, 90% of all those coal leases in Colorado have only had one bidder. There was also a third-party review done that estimated that over the past 30 years, we've seen that the federal government's undervaluation of the coal and public lands may have cost taxpayers around $30 billion in lost revenue. And then we saw a specific example in 2012 where there was a lease to Peabody Energy in the Powder River Basin, which is a huge area in Montana and Wyoming that has a huge reserves of coal. And that particular lease with Peabody Energy cost taxpayers about $1.2 billion just through that lease. And so this is money that, you know, could have gone to funding schools, funding roads, or other big priorities, but instead it just lined the pockets of big coal companies. And in addition to that, you know, that's the price tag just for the coal itself. But then we're not accounting for the ways that we're paying for that coal with our health in lost school days from kids who have had asthma attacks, in the ways that parents are losing funding because they have to stay home with their kids when they're sick from the pollution caused by coal, in the ways that we are paying for it with the food that we eat in terms of fish, the pollution that comes from burning coal that ends up in our food systems in that way, and myriad other ways that we're paying for the impacts of coal with our health and with lost opportunities for other kinds of economic development. You know, we see solar power and wind power outpricing coal. We have, you know, coal-fired production is at an all-time low in the U.S. It's now at 25% of our electricity. And that's an incredible shift in terms of our electricity generation. It shows that it's possible for us to be moving away from using coal as a dominant source of power in the country, and that our economy has also grown while we've done that. While carbon emissions have been going down, our economy has grown. So this is possible. It's high time that we took on this reform and reflected the true cost of coal and really amplified the big benefits that can come from doing something different.
It's interesting when you think about coal, because I had ancestors who were coal miners, but most of us today, we literally don't come into physical contact with coal. We don't have that mental image of what it's like if you hold it in your hands or if it brushes against you. Even though, as you said, it's almost like in our communities, we're sort of insulated against the real dirty part of it, but it is still there. So I wanted to ask you, in the work that you do with the Sierra Club, you must have done a lot of organizing and getting ready for this day. Can you give us a little bit more information that maybe the Sierra Club has seen about the coal emissions and what the public should really know about it? What do you think, in all the work you've done, is the most important thing for everyday people to know about this?
Oh my goodness, there are so many important aspects of how we can be moving beyond coal and really affecting change at all levels. But I think that is one aspect for us, particularly here in the Pacific Northwest. One thing I want to encourage people to know about the transition from coal to clean energy is that it is possible. We are winning. We are making great strides every day. And it is because of people from myriad communities who are speaking out and asking for something better. And so through this particular process, asking for reform of the federal program for leasing coal, we are seeing incredible representation from people all around the country asking for something better. And here in the Pacific Northwest, we have just seen a groundswell of opposition to using coal for both electricity, but also through transport, and opposing these massive coal export terminals that would be on the West Coast, that would be on our beautiful Columbia River. We've seen the fossil fuel industry is trying to make our communities a corridor for these dirty fuels. And people have been standing up in powerful ways to say, we don't want this here and we don't want it anywhere. It harms people from the extraction sites, from the transport, and to the terminals where the coal or other types of fossil fuels would be shipped and then be burned abroad, poisoning communities overseas and sending that pollution back to us. And so I think that powerful public involvement in the communities around the Pacific Northwest has really set a high bar, saying we want to see something different, and decision makers need to get in line with that at every level. That's at a local level, at a state level, and now at this opportunity at the federal level to have our U.S. leaders really reflecting how we can be changing policies to make sure that we are protecting communities from the mining, the transport, and the burning of coal from the whole life cycle. And so folks who could not be in Seattle at the public hearing today can still have their voice heard in the comment period that will extend for about another month. And so folks can share their own particular perspective around how to what they want to see happen around the reform of these federal programs, and make sure that we are accounting for those full impacts, that we are getting something better out of the federal government and transitioning to a clean energy economy, and also making sure that that economic transition is done in such a way that we are not leaving communities behind who have been trapped from within a coal-based economy locally.
Okay, here's the last big question. Seja, how do people participate in this public comment? Do they have to have a computer? How do they do it?
You can do this online. So you can also send in your comments. You can send in handwritten comments as well to the Department of Interior, the Bureau of Land Management. And so you can either do that through their comment site online or send handwritten comments. So you can also email them.
Hear you saying is make your voice heard one way or another.
Yes. Yes. And you can also, write to our federal delegation. Tell our senators and Congress members that you support this this effort to see the federal government change how it's doing business with coal, and make sure that the Bureau of Land Management also knows your comment in reforming this process.
All right. Seja Kearns, Sierra Club, thanks a lot for speaking with us today about this important topic.
Of course. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Debtors Assembly in St. John's, Tuesday, June 21st at 4 p.m. under the bridge at Cathedral Park in Portland. Strike Debt is a nationwide movement of debt resistors fighting for economic justice and democratic freedom. This event also features a Strike Debt Portland potluck. Again, that's the Debtors Assembly in St. John's, Tuesday, June 21st, 4 to 7 p.m. at Cathedral Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
Damn, nigga, damn. Took a chance on you, double and dip the can.
Go!
You could do the dance, take a chance with your lover like this began.
I want somebody who can take it apart. Stitch me back together, make me into who I wanna be. But all you ever do is sit in the dark. Dealing with the devil, you ain't never ever gonna be mine. 'Cause I'm born a dance in the moon.